This is Vince Russo's The Brand.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Welcome to the two-man power trip. I am JP John Paz, and on the show today I have a very, very special guest. He is a co-host and producer, a part of Vince Russo's The Brand, and of course the Realm Network. He is the man of 1,000 nicknames. He is Lois, Lousy, Lumpy, Lazy. He is Mr. Jeff Lane. Jeff, welcome in. How are you doing today, sir?
Hey, thanks, John. I'm doing great, man. How are you?
Doing pretty good. I cannot complain. I feel like 2020 is absolutely terrible, so 2021 hopefully is going to be great, and hopefully some big things looking forward for myself and for you and for the brand. So what's been going on with you lately? I know you got so much stuff. Is it castrating the Mark Central, or what's kind of been going on in your world?
Yeah, a lot of stuff. It's exciting, man. We keep trying to add stuff to the brand. We just had our free month, so we got a lot of new signups, people checking us out for the first time. We got our Patreon going, the Truth of Consequences Patreon at patreon.com/RussoTWC, and of course everything we do at russosbrand.com that you're a part of with Shane and Chad, the Triple Threat Podcast, doing great on there. But just exciting, man. It seems like we're always trying to bring new stuff, new content, and fresh stuff for our listeners.
I think what some people find just interesting is you and like your place in wrestling. Do you find a lot of people don't realize that you were kind of in the business before the brand, or you think that people generally know that?
Yeah, I don't think most knew that I had my hand in a few things on the lower levels in wrestling, you know, in my 20s. And that's all right. Even a few years ago, I got to do some stuff with Vince out in Rocky Mountain Pro. But I think most people just think I'm just some random dude, and that's fine. You know, I never made it big. I have no experience to talk about, but I did learn some things from some people that were successful. I got to work with a wrestling school when I got out of college, doing some creative for them, and that was pretty cool. So I have learned some things along the way.
So how'd you kind of get in? You were just always a big fan and made the leap, or how did you kind of do that?
Yeah, pretty much. When I have a lot of the same like pathways as for fandom that people my age do. Growing up, WrestleMania era, Hulk Hogan, Savage Warrior, big fan as a child, and then once the new generation stuff started and I started to get older, I was too old for it. It was too childish for me, so I got out of wrestling, brought back with the NWO Attitude Era, Monday Night Wars. And I really was brought back by WCW at first, because my roommate in college, who was one of my best friends in high school, still talk to him to this day. He never stopped watching wrestling, was always a huge fan. And I remember him telling me Hulk Hogan's a bad guy. And I'm like, what? Hulk Hogan's a bad guy. So I had to see this stuff. And there's everybody I watched as a kid. Savage and Perfect, you know, all those guys are there. So it was cool. And it was for adults. It didn't seem like it was childish anymore, but I recognized all the people. So I was brought back for WCW, and then eventually you see what's going on in WWF with the Attitude Era, and that took off. And I was just amazed as I got older, really learning not really learning, but watching the creative aspects of wrestling. Nothing to do with what goes on between the ropes. That was something I never wanted to be a wrestler. That was never a dream of mine. But getting invested in the creative and all that behind it, I'm like, that would be cool to do, you know? Like, so yeah. when I was getting out of college, I had got I was a mark just like everybody else watching wrestling, and I started writing like a column for Bob Ryder's onewrestling.com. I was like 20 or 21. They weren't good stuff, but they let me write, and I just wrote like fan columns and stuff. And after that, there's a pro wrestling school in Syracuse, which is about an hour and a half from where I grew up. And so I got in contact with them because I noticed they also had a TV show, and I thought that was interesting. At the same time, they were teaching the guys how to wrestle and do TV. So they were learning both at the school. So I inquired about, who writes your TV? You looking for people that? So they let me come in, and I learned to write TV while these guys are learning to write wrestle. And it was nothing, or while they were learning to wrestle, it was nothing special, just a local TV show. But that's how I kind of got started in creative and writing stuff, and was like 22, I think, 21 or 22.
Wow. Did you have any sort of relationship with Bob Ryder, who obviously just recently passed away?
No, I only met him a couple times. I don't even remember who I contacted, honestly. I just said I was interested in writing, and I sent a couple samples, and they let me write. I don't know. Maybe they would have let anybody write. I don't know, but that's kind of how I got into it. Unfortunately, no, I didn't really get to have a relationship with Bob. One of my good friends was close with him, that I ended up meeting in the business. They were even roommates for a while, and I know it was hard on him when he passed away, but I never got to have a working relationship with him.
So in a way, though, Bob Ryder kind of sort of got you into the wrestling business in his own kind of way, because it was his site.
Yeah, I told Vince, you can, throw blame at him. If you never would have had onewrestling.com, you may have never ran into me, and you wouldn't be working with me today.
It's all his fault. God damn it.
That's right.
Yeah, oh, man. But that's pretty cool, though. I mean, you're doing creative and stuff. Did you like that part of, like, actually having to deal with, like, the actual talent? Like, hey, this is what you got to do. And was that process easy for you, hard for you?
At the school, it was very easy because they were all brand new. So nobody's questioning, and whatever I wanted them to do, they just did it. You know, there was no politics. It was just kids, my young kids, learning how to wrestle, learning to do TV, all this ridiculous crap that I would come up with. They would just do it. The guy that ran the school, he was an indie wrestler by the name of Zachary Springate. He was really good. I learned a lot from him. Without him and taking me into his school, I wouldn't be doing this. I wouldn't be talking to you today. So, but. Pretty much it was easy there. Once I left there and started doing some other things, it was a little bit different, and you see the failure, chances of failing come in big time, and when you finally realize, man, there is no jobs in doing this. There's only like a handful. Like there's really no path here, and I eventually got out of it, but I got to work with a few legends and some pretty big names, so I learned a lot. And I'd have to say probably where I learned the most was, God, it's probably 4 years ago now, when Vince was working for Rocky Mountain Pro. He had me write a few episodes for TV taping, produce them and everything, while, he taught me, watched me while I was doing it. And that was a hell of a learning experience for me.
Yeah, that's got to be pretty cool for sure. When you're doing that, you're writing, you're putting stuff together, is it easy for you, like free-flowing, exactly what you're going to do, or is that a hard thing to do, like writing for these guys and thinking up ideas and stuff like that?
When I was doing the local TV, it was easy because I had already watched what they've done, and I learned who they were, their gimmicks and all that stuff. And it's easier for me when I'm always writing for the same audience, like the TV show every single week. When I had to do indie shows, and I was trying to write indie shows in different towns every night, and there was like 20 to 50 people there, I'm like, there's no point in even trying to do storylines because it's a completely different philosophy when you're just doing a local show. And then you go to the next town, those aren't the same people that were there the night before, so you can't do continuity. So I was pretty much useless writing indie shows. But when I got to write weekly episodic TV, when the guys have defined gimmicks, it's a lot easier for me. I wouldn't say I'm very good at coming up with gimmicks and things for people. I didn't really have a lot of experience at that, but most of the people that I wrote for, they already had characters and stuff, and that was pretty easy.
So who's your influence, like, as far as a writer? Were you aware of Vince Russo? Were you aware of, like, his Crash TV, of his writing and stuff? Or is there somebody else, like a wrestling booker, an old school guy? You said the NWO. Did you know Kevin Sullivan was booking and stuff like that? Like, where did the influence for you come from?
Yeah, it was actually Vince and Ed, but I didn't know it at the time. You know, being a market and not paying attention to any of the stuff, just watching it on TV, yeah, I'm assuming, oh, Vince McMahon's writing all this stuff. It's great, you know. And I remember Survivor Series 98 with The Rock joining the corporation and that whole swerve, and I was just blown away at the creativity of that and how it all led up, and you didn't see it coming, and then it all made sense afterwards. That's what really made me want to be in creative. I'm like, wow, that the way I'm feeling right now, I'd like to make somebody feel that way by writing something that cool. So it was Vince and Ed writing that show, but at the time I had no idea it was them. But Vince had a lot, his writing style had a lot of influence on me way before I even met him.
That's interesting, though. Like, you kind of took to that style, and now you're working for him, you know, really. So how do you kind of just meet Vince, or where does Russo kind of come into actually knowing him and working for him? How does that whole relationship start?
Yeah, the domino effect is very strange. One domino doesn't fall, this whole thing. I wouldn't be talking to you here today, but when I moved on from the wrestling school and tried to get into other avenues in wrestling, I ended up in Indiana and doing some stuff there, and I met one of my best friends now, Rudy Charles. He was in referee in TNA, and he's in WWE now. Oh, yeah. But we kind of came up together on the lower levels. He obviously made it a lot farther than I did, but he made it to TNA at the time, and he was working with Vince, so he knew Vince and everything. So when Vince started Pyro and Ballyhoo, I had a common contact. We both knew Rudy, and you know, I was interested in writing for the website, so he kind of put in a word for me, and that's how that started.
Was that Chris Cash when he was running that whole thing?
Yeah, I just Cash and Vince, and I had come on just to write columns, you know, just columns to put on the site. That's all I was doing.
And what were the columns? You're just like, hey, WWE this week, or WCW, or whatever. Like, you're just writing whatever came to your mind?
Yeah, just random stuff. I was writing a lot of TV things, stuff that didn't have anything to do with wrestling. Because that was the thing when I started there, everybody that was writing there, Vince was the only one that was going to write about wrestling. The rest of us had to write about other stuff, so, which I didn't mind. I had stopped watching wrestling for a few years, so I wasn't even caught up. I had to start watching it again to know what the hell they were talking about, because I had lost interest. Probably around like 06, somewhere around there, 2006, 2005, somewhere in there, I just lost interest with wrestling. But I wrote a lot of pop culture columns and things like that on the site.
So with Pyro and Ballyhoo being gone, obviously Kurt Cash is gone and Russo's going to do his own thing. How do you kind of develop the brand, and where does that whole thing start with you guys going your own separate way and starting up this new venture?
Well, there was a lot of people that wrote and did things for the Pyro and Ballyhoo site, but there's only like two of us that were consistent, always there doing things and loyal, and that was me and another guy, Joe LaCastro. So when the whole Pyro and Ballyhoo thing fell apart, Vince had, like, we were his options. You know, he saw what we did, he saw we were loyal, and he kind of gave us the ball and said, you know, you guys have a chance now, this is what I need from you if you want to do this. And so it was kind of, you know, we were the only ones left, but at the same time, we have to prove ourselves now. And so he had hooked up with the Realm Network, and he was going to start the brand on there, and we were just doing a handful of shows a week to start. I was only on one of them. We had started Lions, Tigers, Bears, and Dirt. We did that a year or so before Disco even came on the show. It was just me and him, and then Andre Corbeil came on for a little bit. But man, if you go back and watch some episodes, like, this was the first podcast I had ever done. Like, you could tell, like, who the hell's this guy? Like, he does not belong here, right? Yeah. Like, because I learned on the job. But, you know, that's what he did, is he kind of made me into be able to do podcasting that I had never done it before by just saying, here, we're doing this, let's go. And I would just keep doing it every week and try to get better. And then I taught myself video editing and things like that. And the brand continued to grow. So it was kind of you know, right place at the right time.
With Vince and the brand, and obviously, you know, you start and you're doing this, you're doing that. When do you guys think, like, okay, let's really kind of expand this thing. Let's start really growing it. Like, we could do more and more and more. And who, you know, who knows what it could be. Like, when did you guys kind of think, like, this is going to be big?
Well, his plan all along was to always create opportunities for people that, you know, may not be wrestling anymore, or guys that he worked with, good people. But, you know, to do that, we had to, you know, grow our business. We had to get more listeners, more members, more subscribers. So as that number went up, and still to this day, the more it goes up, the more people we're able to bring on. It's always, we're putting the money back into the brand to make it better. So, but the first person that came on was Disco. Before that, it was just me and Vince, and that was it. And Joe LoCastro stayed on for a little while, but he has a life and job and other things. He couldn't do it for that long. But we were doing just basically Lions, Tigers, Bears, and Dirt, talking about the news, Raw and a Raw review. I don't even know if we were reviewing SmackDown, and Vince would interview people a couple times a week. Those were the shows. Well, then when he got on Podcast One, that's when he brought Disco on. And so he was kind of our first person to join us that had a name, was Disco. But that was it for a while. And then eventually other people started coming on, and Vito came on, and Stevie Richards and Ben Hameen. And now you see we've grown into now with Shane and Justin Credible and Stevie Ray and Taylor Hendricks and Goldilocks. And I always forget somebody. Every single time I forget somebody different. So whoever I'm forgetting, I apologize. I have ADD. I forget people. But we have so many people now because we are able to grow this. And, you know, we hopefully will be having some new things here to announce in the future. But it was kind of like we had to grow what we had before we could add more. And then, okay, now we're at this plateau. We got Disco. Now we got to grow it again so we can add more people and so on. So,
what do you think of Disco? I love that show. The show is great. I feel like the dynamic with Vince and Disco is great, especially when they're arguing with each other and going back and forth. But what do you think about Disco? He's always busting your balls.
Yeah. It's all in good fun, I think. I mean, I really don't talk to him much outside of that show. That's pretty much my only interactions with him, maybe a couple DMs throughout the week. But, you know, it's all in good fun.
Are you going to get a new hat? He always posts your balls about getting a new hat.
You know, I have other hats. Like, I have that Yankees hat right there, but now I just kind of wear it because I know it annoys him, honestly, you know.
So what do you think about the relationship with Vince and Disco? Like, we were, you know, kind of joking around saying that it's great when they're arguing and stuff, but what is their relationship? I mean, obviously they're friends for a long time, but they definitely butt heads.
Yeah. I mean, they're close. They're good friends. I have a lot of people that say to me, you know, oh, that's a work. And I'm like, guys, this is podcasting. It's not wrestling. We don't sit down with a script beforehand. All right, this is what we're going to do on the show. Literally, I read the news. I pick out what we're going to talk about, and we go on the show and do it. When they get into it, like, that's, I get phone calls afterwards when Vince is pissed off, just bitching about Disco, driving him nuts. So it's like, I'm dealing with these calls. There's no, like, plans for them to go at it. I know sometimes it irritates Vince, and I know Glenn knows how to push his buttons and get him going, but I think that's what makes it entertaining to our listeners.
Yeah, he definitely knows how to push his buttons. I love when he says, yeah, you know, you're a mark. You made yourself the WCW champion, and you wanted your own figure. Why do you have your own figure? I mean, stuff like that, I just crack up because Disco's definitely, and you can tell Vince is getting more angry and more angry. He knows how to bust his balls pretty damn good.
Yeah, and with Glenn, how he's got such thick skin and nothing bothers him, it allows him to continue just to stay there calm and keep pushing Vince's buttons while Vince is the one that's flipping out the whole time. And I know he's doing it just to get him going. But he's got me going a couple times too, so he's very good at it.
Oh, yeah. He definitely, and I think he does it on purpose, really. Yeah, I mean, he wants to, elicit a reaction. He kind of is very cool, calm, and collected. Even if he's yelling, it's not really yelling. He's like kind of just speaking loudly. He knows how to kind of keep himself calm, but also stir up some fighting.
Yeah. But you really look at it, and when they're not arguing and stuff, and you really listen to Glenn's points, and this is stuff, you know, I wasn't aware because I had stopped reading the internet and watching wrestling and stuff, but he has shown me some of the stuff that he used to write on WrestleZone, God, 2007, something like that. He was saying all the things back then that's happening now. You know, he called everything. He's right on a lot, probably most of his predictions on what's going to happen. We're going this way, what people need to do, stop doing. His accuracy in what he thinks or what he's predicting or his opinions, it's really high. You know, I don't know if there's anybody out there that's been more accurate than him, at least on, you know, podcasts and columns and stuff in the past 10 years.
Yeah, he's always on point. I feel like I agree with him like 90% of the time. I mean, he's definitely a guy I'm just like, oh, I got to listen to what he kind of says about this, because it might not be the nicest thing in the world or might not be what people want to hear, but it's the truth. And he always kind of makes a good, valid argument, no matter if it's, like I said, if it's a nice thing or mean thing or if it's something that's just off the wall. He always kind of makes a good point.
Yeah, and he gets a lot of heat for it from people that don't like to hear honesty. But that's where his thick skin comes into it. He doesn't care. He knows he's right. You know, I wish, yep, I was like that more of the time. But he makes points. They're factual points. And people want to get upset with that, but they never come back with facts to counter him. You know, it's just, oh, you suck, or you're wrong, or you're bitter, or you're sexist, you know, because one time he said something about women's wrestling, and then now he's sexist because he criticized the women's wrestling, instead of people saying, well, hey, this is why I think you're wrong. You know, there's never any of that. So right. that normally, when people come at him with insults, that normally just tells me that he was right. You know, they got no other comeback.
Yep. And I feel like when he says stuff like the wrestling boom, I was like, oh, maybe there might be a wrestling boom. I was like, I don't know. He shot it down, said there's no way in hell, and he kind of made a few good points. And hey, look, we're like about a year later, there has been absolutely no boom. It's actually went down. I know people can blame the pandemic, but it's actually gone down. Everything has gone down. So he was 100% right. There is no wrestling boom, and there hasn't been.
Yeah, and I remember one year he had said by this time next year the ratings will drop this amount, and he was dead on. Whatever it was, you know, 100,000 or two points, whatever it was, he nailed it. You know, he's calling these things, he's seeing the patterns, but nobody wants to listen to people like him. It's, you know, everything's fine, we like how things are going, okay, but that's why wrestling's niche today.
And another just interesting thing that is so funny, he mentioned this like weeks ago, maybe months ago. He goes, Sasha Banks, people are going to be really interested in her because of how she dresses, how she carries herself. Obviously, it's a very, very attractive woman as well. I mean, that's besides the point. But he was saying, just like the way she carries herself, the way she dresses, people are going to be interested. And I was kind of like laughed it off. I'm like, yeah, maybe. And then he's right. I see all non-fans and all these other people that don't really watch wrestling. He's right. I see them on Twitter like, what is Sasha Banks wearing? And then the Mandalorian kind of made it go higher. But he was right on that. I was like, wow, that's just a random thing. I was like, I didn't even think about that. But he's right. She has becoming one of the most, her and Roman Reigns are becoming like the two most popular WWE stars. And he kind of called that for whatever reason. He was saying that she's going to be kind of catching fire.
Yeah. And you wonder if I don't know if it was the Star Wars money or the notoriety made that. That's kind of when she started really up in her game dressing like a superstar, because she does dress like a superstar now. Mm-hmm. When she's on TV, she doesn't come out in just her wrestling gear anymore and cut a promo. She's dressed to the nines and she looks like a star, and whatever got that into her head, you know, it's all speculation. We don't know, but it's working, because she does look like a star when she's out there.
Yeah, that was a good one. And he's right, though, about women's wrestling in general. It hasn't really ever really drawn money or drawn this. I know smaller shows can draw, and some of the women can draw, but he was right. And it wasn't meant to be a sexist thing, but he was, you know, basically he was right. Where has, like, the big woman draw been? Has there been a woman Steve Austin? Has there been a woman Hulk Hogan? You know what I mean? Like, there's been no huge woman draw like to kind of go from. I know you could say all the Bella Twins, but those are non-fans that are watching the Bella Twins on E, and they're not really watching wrestling.
And I think that's kind of it right there, is whether it's men or women, you've never really drawn a huge audience with just the wrestling. It's got to be who you are. What is appealing about you? Why are they going to like you or dislike you? What are your characteristics? So I think the problem is why maybe the women's wrestling hasn't drawn in all this is because they're trying to focus on in-ring work. Well, it's just same with the men. You can't focus on the in-ring work. You got to focus on the personalities and the people. That's what they got to worry about. But it was like the women's revolution was all in-ring stuff, and that's not going to draw whether it's men or women.
Yeah, really. I mean, Rousey, you would think, because she's such a big name and she did like a million buys a few times for UFC, you would think that she would have been this huge impact for wrestling into WWE, but she kind of wasn't, because they didn't really make her into a character until it was basically she was on her way out the door with that heel character. So I feel like even her wasn't as big of a draw as she could have been.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to do with if the people checked it out for her, who is she going up against? Well, they didn't book Becky Lynch and Charlotte Strong at that point. They didn't, like, if somebody's turning this on for the first time, they're not threats to Ronda Rousey the way it's being booked. So it just, a lot of it looked like just stupid fake wrestling. Instead of booking it like people that are used to seeing Ronda Rousey in UFC, you need to book that same style in the WWE. But, you know, she's learning and she's green. It's completely different from somebody like Brock Lesnar, who can make it look real and make normal people think, wait a minute, did he just hurt that person? Or, oh my God, I wouldn't want to mess with him. Rousey could do that, but they're not teaching her. They're teaching her the fake wrestling stuff. She's coming out waving and smiling. Like, you know, what is this? That's not the badass Ronda Rousey that people were used to watching. So I think part of it, well, probably the majority of the reason why it didn't take off was the presentation and the booking that she was involved in.
Is there anybody currently that you actually like or enjoy or think that there's a good character? Is there anybody out there? I mean, Roman Reigns sticks out to me a little bit, but anybody currently, it could be WWE, AEW, you're like, oh, this, you know, this guy, girl, whoever has something, has, you know, mainstream power or some drawing ability where you're actually interested in them?
There's a lot of people that I wish could have good creative behind them that I think could be big stars. I'm not necessarily enjoying what's being done with them, but you can see the talent in them when they're on TV, like Elias or Lacey Evans, Roman Reigns, Peyton Royce. There's a lot of people that have the potential to be good characters, and a lot of it I see with, especially the two women I just mentioned, and the other iconic, Billie Kay. They both did it. But Lacey Evans and them, when they're in their matches, their character is with them the whole time. They're wrestling in that character. They don't lose the character when they start doing wrestling moves, and that's a big thing. You know, instead of thinking spot, 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 they're still, Lacey Evans is still acting like Lacey Evans, the character. The Iconics were still being annoying Iconics while they were wrestling, and that's a big thing that a lot of people don't do today. But, you know, Matt Riddle, I think, could be, his booking is awful. But that guy's got a lot of potential. He's somebody I wish had good creative. So there's a bunch of people there that have a lot of talent. They just don't have the creative backing to go along with it.
Did you catch Riddle's last couple promos? It doesn't sound right. Call me crazy, but it doesn't sound like anything he would say. Or he just made to sound like a complete idiot. It's like, wow, like, is this Riddle or is this the, you know, I don't know, 26-year-old writer in the back that has no clue? Like, you know what I mean? It's just like, who's writing this stuff?
Yeah, and who's laughing at it? I mean, seriously, who's laughing at Bronuts? I mean, are people laughing at this stuff? To me, it's just stupid. And it's obviously the guy can talk, but he's given terrible material. It's like, I'm seriously, is Vince McMahon the only one laughing? Who knows? You know, somebody thinks it's funny back there, and that's why they're doing it. But are people at home watching it and laughing? I'm not. Are you? You know, it's not funny.
Just terrible. I guess it's all for Vince's amusement, but it's all these guys that, I don't know, they showed that video not that long ago of the creative team, and I was like, these guys are part of the creative team? Never judge a book by its cover, but I'm like, I don't know, they just don't scream like guys that I would want to be writing my wrestling company, you know what I mean? It's not Russo and Ferrara back there, you know, creating havoc with the Attitude Era, or even, you know, like, I don't know, Gewurz would even be better just with some of the stuff that he came up with. But I don't know, what are these guys doing, thinking of? I guess all just for McMahon's humor. But I don't know. I don't know if you saw that video or not. I had the same thought, but I'm like, this is the writing staff? Obviously, besides maybe Foley's kid. I'm like, who are these guys, and what are they doing?
Yeah, and you wonder, actually, how much of their stuff is actually in the final product, because you've heard a lot of interviews from people that have come out of that system, or, you know, it's all Vince McMahon. It's all the please. I don't know. It was Arne Anderson or somebody like that that used to work there that was a, you know, big name agent or whatever. I think it was Arne. I may be wrong, but it said, you know, people are writing to please Vince. That's it. That's what you're doing. So they could have all this great stuff, but if Vince doesn't like it, it sounds like it's not going to get on TV. So I don't even know if you can blame those people when we don't even know how much of what they actually come up with ends up on our screen.
Yeah, that's true too. I mean, what are they doing for Vince? Are they trying to appease Vince? You know, Bruce Pritchard is just kind of there because he's the guy that understands Vince and what Vince wants the best. So it's even like do his ideas. People will blame him for creative, but even him, does his ideas even get through, or is he just doing it to appease Vince because he knows what Vince likes better than anybody else?
Yeah, you wonder. I mean, we've heard the stories, and that's pretty much all I can go by because I've never worked there. I've never worked with him. I've never seen it, but I can tell you what we're seeing on TV, and it's just awful. You know, it's very hard for me to find one thing in a 3-hour show every single week that I thought was good, and that's pretty sad. That's pretty sad.
Is that why the Raw and SmackDown reviews are so short?
Yes, yeah, mine are definitely short. You know, I wish I had one around here, but I had done a 3-hour, you know, Raw watch. That I take notes while I watch it so I can do my review on my Patreon. I had less than a page of notes on a 3-hour show. That should be impossible, you know, but it's all filler and it's all stretched out and everything matches all go through commercials and nothing happens and all the promos are generic. I'm going to talk crap about you, and then this person's going to beat up this person. Rinse and repeat. There's never anything interesting to talk about.
That's just crazy. Like 3 hours, you should have at least 3 pages, right? Or maybe even more.
Yeah, yeah. It's brutal. It's absolutely brutal. And why anybody that doesn't watch wrestling would turn it on and stay there, I couldn't tell you. You know, I would love to see people that maybe used to watch 10, 15 years ago, sit down now and watch it again for the first time and get their reactions. Get people's reactions that don't watch wrestling at all and never watched it. But one of these shows I remember watching, and I'm trying to figure out what the hell's going on, and I'm thinking to myself, if I'm sitting next to somebody that's never watched before, I could not explain to them what the hell's going on right now. Like, I could not make them understand because it doesn't make sense to me, and I watch this crap every week.
Yeah, I got a good buddy of mine who, you know, he used to love wrestling. We used to go to all the shows. We went to WrestleMania 15, his front row. We literally went to a million shows together and just he used to love wrestling, doesn't watch anymore. So I'll be like, hey, check out AEW, you know, this last year, a new league. So he watches it. I'm like, okay, what do you think? He's like, probably won't be tuning in next week. You know, it's cool to see this guy, that guy, that guy, whatever. Not going to be joining in this week. So when Sting debuted, he watched the following week because, you know, it's Sting, and obviously he knows Sting very well. He was such a big fan. Hey, are you going to be watching the next week? Probably not. So if he has that reaction, who used to be a huge fan, who kind of wants to be a fan again and won't watch, I have a feeling that's like a million more people, or 2 million, whatever it is, millions of people more that gave that a chance, and then boom, rating goes right back down the toilet again.
Yeah, I agree. And that's the type of person they should be getting. And when they come back to see Sting, okay, who else is there? Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone, Chris Jericho. There's other people that they remember. But the problem is the product is not recognizable to them. It's like a completely different thing. It's not wrestling that they remember. And they don't do anything with Sting to make you want to come back and see what Sting's going to do next. So they get these people in, but they give them no reason to stay and to come back the next week. And that's a shame because these are the people that are out there that they could get back that would be easy to get back because they used to like wrestling. So it's not like they're trying to get into something new that they're not familiar with. They've been wrestling fans. But the problem is today's wrestling is not anything close to why they were fans in the first place. So even if something draws them back, like a Sting or something like that, Ronda Rousey, whatever it is, they're not going to stay long.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like, and Vince called it a couple weeks ago. I don't know if it was on 8 days a week or it was on another show. He said, oh yeah, it'll pop a big rating. They'll get around a million for Sting. Then he goes, and it'll go back to normal because they're going to catch these other guys in AEW that suck or they don't like them or, you know, they're scrubs, quite frankly. Maybe they're not ready for TV. They're not going to stick around. AEW's not going to hold them. So I feel like that's just the pattern. Mike Tyson, oh, you know, 900,000 people back down. Oh, Bischoff is on, 900,000 people back down. Sting, a million people right back down. It just seems like it's like the same thing. They'll pop a rating, but only for a week or two, and then it goes right back down to, I guess, 800,000 is kind of like their comfort zone, or 750, and that seems like where they generally land week in, week out.
Yeah, and you look at the big boom in the late 90s when people would come back to see people that they recognized, like I did with Hulk Hogan and stuff like that. Well, there was new stars that you got interested in the way they were booking, you know, whether it was Goldberg or Chris Jericho, whoever it was, you came back for the faces you remembered, but then you remember the new people that you saw that night. You wanted to see them again. When people tune in to AEW now, who are they seeing besides the people that they know that they want to see next week? They're not getting interested in the people that they don't know, and that's another problem.
Yeah, that's true. That is, I don't know. It's one of those things, like, I don't know what they need to do, but a little bit of an overhaul, because they got some pieces in place to be good, but I don't know if Khan is not the right booker. I don't know if that all the talent there is necessarily needed. It's just, I don't know. It's a lot of work, but if I could just change gears here and talk about possibly the most popular show on the brand. You're obviously part of it each and every week, Castrating the Marks. I mean, I like a lot of those guys. I obviously am very good buddies with Jason Powell. I know Meltzer. Alvarez is a nice guy. You may disagree on a lot of this, by the way. I know Mike Johnson pretty well. He's a nice guy. Wade Keller's nice. But in the context of that show, I cannot stop laughing at some of the stuff that they say and do and the way they react, because it's like, okay, it's one thing to be friendly with them, but it is another thing entirely to be able to laugh at them, because a lot of the stuff they do and say is like, it's, I don't know, like shocking, mind blowing, but also just flat out hilarious. Right. I mean, Wade with his booking, I always chuckle, because is he serious or is he doing it for entertainment? I don't know. Like, Castrating the Mark, tell me just all about your thoughts on the show and kind of just conceiving the show to begin with, because it might be one of the best ideas of a podcast that, you know, you could possibly think of.
Yeah. Well, as far as those guys, I don't know any of them. I've never met any of them. So my opinion on them is purely professional, what they do professionally, what I hear them say. So they could be the nicest guys in the world. They could be the biggest jerks in the world. I don't know either way, because I don't know them. But that this whole show idea was all Vince. He called me one night, thank God, almost 4 years ago. He's like, I want to do a show where we play their clips and just rip them and show people how they don't make sense and they're not experts in all this stuff. And I'm like, you know, okay. And I hated the idea at first, because I had to listen to every single one of these shows every week to get the clips, and that was torture. It was absolutely torture. And so it was a pain to me. And then once it was big at first, you know, it took off because the way Vince was reacting to these clips. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I got the idea, maybe the brand wants to help with these clips, because if I can cut down the time that I have to listen to these shows, I'm going to be able to do a lot more other things, because I mean, seriously, with my ADD, I can't listen to podcasts and do work at the same time, because I'm not soaking in what I'm listening to. It goes in one ear and out the other.
No focus. Yep.
Yeah. When I had to find the clips, I'm listening to the shows. That's all I'm doing. So I was spending a lot of my time wasting doing that, because I can't multitask that way. But I'm glad I came up with the idea for the listeners to be able to submit clips to, because they find way better clips than I ever found. You know, they find things that I would have missed. They've developed their own, like the Wade Keller booking, or, you know, the farter knots. Like, they've come up with all this stuff on their own. Yep. And that's, the show has kind of become the brand's show, because they supply the content. They're the ones that get the stuff on the show for Vince. I just go through their emails and pick what I think is the best ones and play them for Vince. But our listeners are the ones that bring all that stuff to the table. So when this show, you know, is successful as it is now, I don't know if it would be this successful. I doubt it. If I've still been doing the clips the entire time, because I think they do a better job at it than I did.
Feel like if I hear like two marks, one cup, I'm like, all right, here we go. I'm gonna laugh at this one. Like, you know what I mean? Is there somebody that sends you submissions? You're like, oh shit, I got, you know, gotta click on this one. This is gonna be great.
There's a lot of them. They're getting so good at it, man. It, every week now, it's so hard to narrow it down for a show. At first, it was easy. I would get a lot of bad submissions. Like I would get submissions like, I don't understand why this is being sent in. Like, I don't get the person's point, but 90% of them I get now could probably be on the show. It's really tough to narrow it down because they're getting so good at it. But, you know, normally if I see a Mitchell, I'm hoping it's a funny one, you know, funny noise he's making or something like that. If I see a two marks, one cup submission for Johnson and Scherer, I hope it's, you know, entertaining radio or the submarine sounds. I don't know. I like the funny stuff. The funny stuff always pops me, you know. I think that's part of the issue. These guys don't want to laugh at themselves and take everything Vince says way too seriously. But these guys are getting so good at submissions, man.
Yeah, I feel like even when, like, I think it's Francisco Castano, he'll find, like, an old one. And it's like, where the hell did he get that from? Like, is he going back into the archives? Is he getting it on, like, where is he getting these awesome clips? I'm always curious. Are you curious, too? Like, how the hell did you find that? Like, it's pretty, like, almost like finding a pirate treasure.
Yeah, we got a few people that do that, actually, and I feel bad for them because I know the work they have to put into it to go back and find these old shows. you know, I know we get a lot of older Wade ones from Nathan Vaughn, who's one of our listeners. He goes through old Wade Keller shows and finds them, you know, stuff like that too. So there's so much gold out there in the older shows that was from before we ever started doing Castrating the Marks, that if somebody really dived into all that stuff, it's amazing to think of how much gold is out there that we could use. But I mean, these guys say so much ridiculous stuff on a weekly basis now anyway. You know, we never run out of material.
Did you think when you and Vince kind of first started this, like, okay, this probably only lasts a month or so because of the clips? Or were you thinking like, okay, this only has a certain amount of shelf life? Or were you like, all right, there's so many millions of clips, this show will never end? Like, were you kind of in one ballpark or another?
At first, I thought this show will run its course, because how many variety of things are we? It's just going to be the same. They're going to be saying the same stuff every week, you know. But I couldn't have been more wrong. I mean, it doesn't stop. There's new stuff, you know, new takes and new hilarious things. So at first, I just thought this will probably get old because there won't be a lot of variety, and we'll probably end up saying the same things every week. But God, we're coming up on episode 200 soon, man, which is crazy. I never thought it would have went that long.
And you even have extra episodes on Patreon, so you got extra clips, right? Even more so than the 200.
Yeah, we started doing one a month on Patreon for one of our higher tier supporters. We wanted to give them something else for supporting, which has helped, because that's a whole extra show now of clips that I don't have to cut, you know, like, because there's gold that hits the floor every week. So now there's less gold hitting the floor every week because we have a fifth show every month now to do it. So, but yeah, it doesn't end. And I got more and more submissions coming every week, more people wanting to submit and get stuff on the show. But I am so grateful for our listeners, because they've allowed me to do other things now for the brand that I wouldn't have as much time to do if I had to listen to these shows. And they've made the shows better with their quality of submissions. It's better than, if you go back and listen to the first few episodes where I was doing them all, they're kind of weak. You know, I was just trying to find things that didn't make sense. I wasn't hearing the funny stuff, or you know the stuff that these people have found. So I'm so grateful for them.
Yeah, I mean they're hitting a home run each and every week. It's possibly between that and Disco, my two favorite shows on the brand, just to listen to. Just, I don't know, it's just so funny. I mean, I can like those guys, but I can also laugh at them too, because yeah, that stuff is just so funny. That some of that Meltzer stuff, I literally, like, even just in my head thinking of it, like, somebody mentioned Dennis Miller to me, and I just in my head was like, have you heard the Dennis Miller story? Like, like, I just laugh because it's like stuck in my head now. But like, some of the stuff Meltzer says, it's just, I don't think he's lying, and Vince said the same thing. He doesn't think he's lying, but some of the stuff he says is so off the walls, bonkers. Like, I don't know where he comes up with the stuff, but the Dennis Miller one might be my all-time favorite, just because it's so, like, intricate, but so insane, and then just so funny. And then he hits that awesome line, and then his voice. Ever heard that Dennis Miller before?
I know, it's the stupid stuff we laugh at with his voice, like that Cork and Hall clip, because he was sick and his voice was cracking. If he wasn't sick, that wouldn't have been funny, but we're so immature, we're laughing at at the voice, you know? we a couple years ago, we had a similar one, like the Dennis Miller story, but it was about Hot Topic. You know, I can't, anytime I hear Hot Topic now, I'm thinking Meltzer. It doesn't matter what context I'm hearing Hot Topic in, I just think of Meltzer. Like, I don't think these guys understand that a lot of this stuff is entertaining to us. And I know a lot of our listeners now listen to those guys because of this show. So, I mean, whether you're being laughed at or whatever, as long as somebody's listening to your show for whatever reason, I think that's good. And I, hey, there's people that listen to them just to hear that stuff every week now. So,
and if somebody, I don't know why, if somebody says to me Tuesday night, immediately for like the last couple weeks, I always think Tuesday night Dynamite, TNT on TNT, Tuesday night Dynamite.
Still trying to make sense of that one. Yeah, I don't know if he ever caught himself afterwards or what.
Oh, I'd love to hear that, because that's so funny. It's like, you know, Dynamite starts with a D, right? Like, where did he get that from? That's so great. And he's so excited about it, too. He's like, TNT, Tuesday night, Dynamite.
Yeah,
I love that.
I mean, there's entertainment in that. Why can't you laugh? I've said so many stupid things, made stupid noises, that when people point them out to me, I just laugh, and I'm a little embarrassed, but I'm not offended by it. You know, whatever. We all do it. But I don't know. Some people don't have a good sense of humor about that, I guess.
Yeah, that's the thing. Wrestling is very serious to them, so they don't really have a sense of humor about it, even though they should, because if they listened back or if they had that sense of humor, they would understand, like, okay, I could see that being funny. I mean, that's some of that stuff is just flat out hilarious.
Yeah, and that's why we became such big Jason Paul fans, because the guy has a sense of humor, and he's hilarious. Yep. Once we really started diving into his content, we're like, he's completely different than the rest of them. And we have so many people now that are fans of him, and we're fans of him. We don't even castrate him anymore. We play his entertaining stuff to pop us. You know, he's not castrating worthy. The guy's an entertainer. He's hilarious. And, you know, me and Vince have become big fans of him, and I know the brand has too. I'll get people listening to his shows to try to find that next funny rant that he does, you know, about the popcorn or that one movie he went to with his girlfriend and her mother. I mean, he's got the best stories, man, when he goes off on stuff.
Oh, yeah. I messaged him. This was a few weeks ago. You guys played that glory hole clip. I messaged him. He's like, where'd you hear that? On the Q&A. I was like, no, I heard it on Russo. They were laughing at it. He goes, oh, it was me just screwing around.
Yeah, that's it. He's so good. If he just did a show that had nothing to do with wrestling, he'd be successful. I have no doubt. He's got the talent, man. He's hilarious.
Yeah, he's kind of like a good old school like radio broadcaster, for sure. It was great to get him and Vince together, because he even said he had nothing against Vince. You know, he would do it, so I kind of had to be like the intermediary or the middleman for it. But he had no problem with it. He might get some heat from the other guys, but he had no problem with Vince. And they were able to have a great talk, and I feel like any of those guys could probably come on and do it. I feel like maybe Meltzer wouldn't, but I don't know. Alvarez seems like he wouldn't do it, but he seems like he and Vince wouldn't hate each other as much as you'd think. Like Wade Keller, if they actually talked, because they used to be friendly. I mean, they used to do the insiders thing together. I feel like they'd be kind of more friendly. I don't know. Bruce Mitchell might be a little bit, chaotic. They might argue and stuff. But I think a lot of those guys, if they came on, I don't think it would be a fight.
Yeah, I don't know why they don't. I honestly wish that I knew. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if some of them don't want to lose the hate on Vince Russo gimmick. You know, if they make nice with him, they can't, you know, continue that narrative and bash him on the shows, which a lot of them are like. They like to hear the bashing the Vince Russo. So, you know, you don't want to lose that if that's a draw for you. I think that might be part of the reason. I remember when Vince had R.D. Reynolds on a few years ago, Brian Alvarez refused to come on because they were going to talk about the book that R.D. and Alvarez wrote, The Death of WCW. Alvarez wouldn't come on. So I don't know why. I don't know why some of these guys won't come on, but I wish they would. You know, it's funny. Jason Paul had ammunition that he didn't even use. If you go back to one of our earliest episodes, when The Undertaker wrestled Reigns and he left his hat in the ring, we had a clip from Paul saying he could see The Undertaker coming back and he didn't think he was done. Well, Vince went off on him. He's obviously done. He left his hat in the ring. You don't know what you're talking about. Well, Paul was right and Vince was wrong. I've been waiting for this, you know, for him to say, now, wait a minute, you know, the one you ripped me on. But he didn't use that. I thought that would have been interesting.
And I love, you know, him telling him about marbles. He's like, at first I was kind of offended, but then he got over it. I mean, he is like a funny guy where he doesn't really take that to heart or take that too personally.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. He does have a good sense of humor. You know, he even talked about it. But that's the thing. The other guys, like, I don't see Meltzer ever laughing at the Mr. Magoo references. You know, I don't see that happening, you know. But they just don't have sense of humors like that. And you see the stuff that they actually laugh at. Their sense of humors are so weird, you know, the stuff that they do laugh at.
and they find BTE, being the elite, entertaining, which I do not. So it's an interesting kind of dynamic with those guys and what they like and what they don't like.
Yeah, I've seen a handful of them, so I can only go on a small sample size, but I never laughed at anything. I mean, the other 100 episodes or whatever that I haven't seen may be hilarious, but the way that they laugh at it, you would think it's the funniest show on YouTube.
Yeah, it's like, whew, I don't know. I watched a few times. I couldn't watch anymore. Just not for me. I don't know. I'm 38, going to be 39 next year. So it's like, am I too old for that? But isn't Cody my age and all these guys? Like, and Omega is older than me. So it's like, I don't know. For some reason, it's just not catching me. I just not liking some of that stuff. Maybe some of their in-ring stuff, but that BT stuff, I'm not a fan.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good concept. But just the episodes that I saw, it wasn't anything that I could get into, you know. But if it's written for the diehards and the marks, if that's their target, it's doing well. So you can't, I mean, if it's like with AEW, if Tony Khan does not want to change things, well, that's his right. It's his company. And if he only cares about writing for the marks, well, then that's fine. That's his company. But that's what they're going to get. So it is what it is. You know, if they're trying to get the other fans to come back, well, they're obviously going about it the wrong way. But you can't sit here and tell them you're never going to get fans this way. They might not even want them. They might not even care. You know, they just like doing what they're doing, and that's fine with them. But that's, you know, that's holding the wrestling business back, in my opinion.
Yep, totally agree. Now, as far as you and all the shows on the brand, 8 days a week, you got Castrating the Marks, you got Disco. But on Patreon, like we just kind of briefly mentioned before, you got the Raw and SmackDown interview. You play games on your Twitch channel. But something I've been dying to talk to you about, because I was such a big fan of the show, Lost, and covering the Lost episodes. And I kind of just wanted to talk about this for a second, because seasons 1 through 5, it's one of the best shows ever. Just so well done. What the hell happened in season 6? Did they not have an ending? What was JJ doing? Like, what the hell happened in season 6? It was so good, and literally it went to crap.
Yeah. I like it. I really do. And the more I watched season 6, the more things I would catch, and it made sense. And I thought the ending did make sense. I don't want to spoil for people that hadn't seen it. I mean, if you got specific points you want to bring up, that's cool. It's your show. I'll talk about them. But the show in general, I think, is the best written television show of all time. That's just my opinion. The swerves, the cliffhangers, the characters, I don't think anybody ever did it better. And you know, you mentioned JJ Abrams, but what's interesting is he kind of left in the first season. He handed it off to Damon Lindelof. Yep. And then he brought in Carlton Cuse to work with him, and they were pretty much the creative guys for the entire show. And I think when they got to season 6, the way that they wrote it, with the two parallel things going on at the same time that you didn't understand until the end of the season why that was happening, they were writing, it was about the characters and it wasn't about the island and it wasn't about any of the hatches or any of that stuff. That season was about every single person that was on that island in tying up their story and everything, where their path and where they're coming to. And the way that it ended, I think, you know, without, you know, it brought everybody together in that one place, and they all, you know, were together. And, you know, the one person, I'm not ready yet, you know, and we there was reasons for that. But I thought that it's very hard to keep something going without changing it and appease everybody. Because if they would have kept following the same formula, the show would have got stale. But if you really break it down, every season had a different theme. Season 1 was the opening, crashing on the island, what's going on. Season 2, here comes all the hatches and everything. Season 3, we really learned about the others. Season 4, we got the flash forwards. Season 5, we got the time jumps. And then season 6, we got the other timeline. So yep. I mean, they really did a different pattern every single season, but I think that's what kept the show fresh and creative.
You know, another reason why I didn't like season 6, but it's because of the way I watched it. The other seasons, I would wait till the season was over. I'd get it on DVD and I'd watch them straight through, you know, a couple days or whatever it is. You know, you binge watch it. Season 6, I'm like, oh no, I'm gonna wait each week. And that, I don't know, for some reason that kind of ruined it for me. I'm like, oh, I'm waiting for the week. I want to watch them all together. It kind of ruined it for me a little bit. But what I thought was, it always happens on the last season for all these shows. I know Dexter went downhill a few seasons before the last, but they always fast forward everything. Everything speeds up. Lost was great because season 1 through 5 was so kind of slow. Like, it took a whole season to get to a certain point. So the last season, to me, they felt like they had a fast forward and this, fast forward and this, but then they kind of left this open or they left that open. Did you kind of sense that too? It's almost like they had to fast forward a little bit, and because this was the last season, they couldn't slow it down. They had to rush just a little bit on closing some storylines.
There was some of that stuff that I thought, because when they made their deal, they wanted to end the show. So they made the deal with ABC. We wanted to, after season 3, they wanted to do 3 more seasons, but they wanted them to be shorter seasons. So they were like 15, 16 episodes each. The last 3 seasons were the first seasons were 22, 23 episodes. So they had from 4 to 6, seasons 4 to 6, they had about 6 to 7 less episodes every single season. So I think it would have done them better maybe to have the extra episodes in season 6, but at the same time I'm wondering if they would have had to stretch the stuff going on in the other timeline, and that just would have got stale. But I know what you're saying about watching it week to week instead of binge watching it, because if you're like me, I forget a lot of the stuff that happens. So when something ties in episode 14 from episode 2, I might not have remembered what happened in episode 2 because it's 12 weeks later. But when we're binge watching it, it could have been 2 days ago. So I'm easily going to remember it. So I think it's especially with serialized shows like that, that are heavy into plot threads and hooks and things like that. It's much better to binge watch.
I feel like with Lost, there's a couple characters. I'm not going to go into too many specifics, but let's just say the one guy, and it's a minimal character at this point, but one guy wore black, one guy wore white, but they weren't, like, you thought they were going to be much more than what they were in the show. That kind of disappointed me, too. It's like, oh, I thought they were going to be this big character, and it was going to be important, but they kind of weren't as important as, obviously, the guy who becomes the Man in Black and another character who's kind of like the White Knight. But I don't know, I just thought like some of the characters were going to get some more development, and they kind of didn't.
Yeah, I thought that too, but going back and rewatching it, I kind of lost a little of that feeling, because you realize that they're not important as compared to the people that were on the plane. It's all about the stories of the people on the plane. So these other people, the ones you're talking about, they're the island stories. They're the scenery and all that stuff. So they're there to tie in the whole island stuff and not necessarily make you care about them too much. It's to make sense out of the whole situation that's surrounding the people on the plane that you're supposed to care about. So I think rewatching, I've noticed so many different things and changed my opinions on things rewatching it, you know, over and over.
Damn, I'm going to have to go back in and rewatch now and get some of this. Damn, but I highly recommend, you know, people listening to your show about Lost if they want to learn more. But I feel like I got to rewatch. But there was a YouTube clip I saw, and it was like the plot holes of Lost. It's like, I forget how long, it's like 40 minutes or something. Have you seen that? It's a lot of like the plot holes, but Lost, the creators were saying they did that on purpose and not everything has a closure. What did you think, or did you even see that?
I don't know if it's the same one I saw. I did see one that covered, unsolved plot threads or whatever.
Yep.
And I would say 75% of them I could answer. I'm like, this was solved. It was solved here. But you got to rewatch it to remember it. You know, I always thought there was something that wasn't solved. But then when I rewatched it, I'm like, oh, my God, there it is right there. Why did I think that this wasn't solved? So there was a couple things. I know one of them was solved in a... which people were mad at, and I can understand this, but they filmed something separate for an extra on the Blu-ray on season 6 that solved one of the things that was not solved in the show. So it was the who's dropping the pallets of food? Where are they coming from?
Yeah,
it was never said in the show, but there's a mini episode on season 6 Blu-ray that shows all that. So that I can understand why some people were mad at that. You would expect to get those answers in the actual episodes and not be forced to buy something. But a lot of the other stuff I've had discussions with people like, well, they never explained this, but I can explain it to them. Yes, they did. This is how they did it. And they're like, oh, you know, I'm sure there's some that weren't and that I couldn't figure out. And, you know, I'd have to listen to the interviews to say, you know, hear which ones they did and why they left it like that, or maybe wanted people to create their own idea for it. But I would say the majority of things that people think they didn't answer were answered.
Interesting. Okay. We'll definitely get to check that out on Patreon. But as we head towards the wind down and head towards the finish, I want to mention this other show that you're kind of a guest star on occasionally, and that is Get My Go with our buddies Feeney and Durbin, and then of course with Husey as well. What is the deal with this show, man? I think John Wanglin is a star. You guys don't. What is up with Get My Go?
If I was him, I'd be thanking them. Honestly. I know. Because how many people know who he is now that didn't just because of that show? Okay, they're making fun of you. So what? It's like the same thing we do on Cast Rating. If somebody did a show making fun of me, and all these new people now know who I was because of that show, thank you. Like that I would be thanking them, you know, for giving me publicity, however it is. But I don't know. It's the way they do this show. It's got such a cult following, you know. It's very niche, but these people now know who this guy is that didn't know before, and I would be thanking them for it. But I don't know. I think I was way wrong on this. I don't know if you've heard the story, but I remember, God, I don't know if it was a year or so ago, I was telling Joe, why are you giving this guy the rub? Why are you giving him the time of day? Just ignore him. I'm like, you know, you're bigger than him. You're giving him publicity. Why even waste your time? I was way wrong on that, because this show is freaking hilarious, you know, and you know, those guys saw the entertainment there, and I mean, props to them, all three of them. They're geniuses. I think the way they do that show.
It is a very, very funny show. I don't really know John other than, you know, like through Twitter and stuff, but I don't know him at all. And obviously these guys have a backstory with him and a history with him. Interesting to find out your history with him as well. And I didn't even remember, but, you know, now looking back and thinking back, listen to all the Castrating the Marks. Yes, he was on Castrating the Marks. And obviously they have that great quote, John Wanglin, who, from Vince. So, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, you guys all have a history with this guy, and it's interesting kind of learning your story of working with him, or knowing him, or friends with him, or former friends with him.
Yeah, and I was talking to Chad about this. It's like everybody has their own different path with this guy that don't even intersect. Chad has met him, you know, in person. And I'm like, I learned that from Get My Go, listening to that story. I didn't know that Chad ever met him until I heard Chad's episodes on there. So everybody's interacted with him somehow in a different way. You know, my path was, I thought that he was disrespectful to Vince after Vince did a lot of things with him. Joe dealt with him, working with him on the Creative Control Network and everything that went with that. So, you know, it's weird how everybody has their own different path with this guy. And I think all that stuff is what eventually created this masterpiece. I'm going to call it a masterpiece. I think it's a masterpiece. It's one of the few things that when I see it pop up, I instantly watch it. There's not many things like that, but when I see my YouTube and there's a new Get My Go, I stop what I'm doing and I watch it. That there's not many things I do that with today.
Do you find him funny at all? Am I crazy? Like, for some reason, I think he's funny. Not entirely being purposely unfunny. Obviously, he's responding to something that they did or they said, and he's like going back and he's like, oh, Durbin, I like that guy. Great guy. He goes, but he's a dope. And like, you know what I mean? Like, stuff like that. Do you find him funny at all? Just in that context where he's like responding to them. Like, he's angry, but he's being funny in his own way.
It's the same way that I laugh at Meltzer. Or I laugh, you know, at Keller's booking. It's the same stuff. Yeah, I laugh at that stuff. And then I laugh even more when, you know, Husey's making his comments about it. Or Durbin puts in his clips. Or Joe's sitting there, you know, going like this and shaking his head. And I don't know. I think it's comedy gold. I really do. And if he's offended by it, I think he needs to see that these guys are actually helping him, you know, get people to know who he is. You know, any publicity is good publicity, is what they say, or whatever, to use a cliche like he does all the time. but you know, a lot of the times that's true. If people know who you are, does it matter how they know who you are? Because they didn't know who you were before.
And to be honest, Chad put him over to me a while ago, saying, oh, this guy's got Severn, this guy's got Vampiro. So I didn't really know until those guys kind of faded away. You know, obviously Severn and Vampiro doesn't work with them anymore, but I didn't really know. And I was like, okay, that didn't really last long. He's like, and then learning more about Wanglin from the show, I was like, oh, okay. I was like, now I'm starting to understand who this guy is and know who this guy is. So I've only kind of heard of him and obviously know his Twitter handle or his podcast network, but I didn't really know too much about him until the show. So now I'm kind of exposed to him big time.
Yeah, see, that's how it goes. And, you know, the old show that he used to do before these new ones, I before I went on his show, I had listened to a bunch of them because that's what I do. If somebody asks me to go on the show and I don't know who they are, I always want to listen to them first to see what this is all about. And the shows I listened to, I didn't think were bad. I thought there was a lot of entertaining stuff that they talked about. He had different co-hosts back then and stuff, and the shows that I listened to, it wasn't the way he talks now, you know, just taking shots at people left and right and saying ridiculous things. So I think he's kind of changed, just from what I've heard. I haven't listened to everything he said. I think he's kind of changed the way he does his podcasting. But I don't know. I just think he needs to lighten up, and who cares? If people are listening to your show now because of that show, then that's good for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, as far as just some quick hitters for you, we'll just do some quick hits. Do you have a favorite promotion of all time?
Wrestling?
Yep.
WWF. Yeah, like, when I was a kid, I didn't watch NWA or WCW. I really didn't even know they existed. All I watched was WWF. So if it was never for Hulk Hogan and WrestleMania and all that stuff, I would have never gotten into wrestling.
What is your favorite time period? Would it be the Hogan era, or was it the Attitude era?
It's a tough call. It really is a tough call. I would say I had the most fun during the Attitude era, because during the Hogan early WrestleMania era, I would just watch by myself, you know, as a kid in front of the TV. But during the Attitude era and the Monday Night Wars, I'm watching with my friends and we're going to shows, and it's, you know, it's a group thing. So I would probably, you know, have to lean a little bit towards the Monday Night War era, just because of the interaction with my friends over it.
Yeah, the emotional investment for those 2 hours in two different points of our lives. But it's interesting. It's like you get invested this way and then invested this way. But either way, you're emotionally invested in the product. Do you have a favorite wrestler of all time?
Favorite wrestler of all time? God, that's tough, because it's like, it's hard not to say Hulk Hogan, because if he was never there, I don't think I would have ever watched wrestling. I don't. Even with WrestleMania and everybody else that they had, if Hulk Hogan wasn't there, I don't think I would have ever watched. So it's hard not to say Hulk Hogan, because I don't think I would know any of the other wrestlers if it wasn't for him.
Do you have a favorite match or matches, or does that exist for you? Do you have some looking back that you absolutely love?
I would say the one I remember being most invested in was Hogan and Savage at WrestleMania 5, and with the, you know, Elizabeth stuff and all that. So I'd probably go with that. I remember that was the first match as a kid where, like, the story really got me, and, yeah, you know, I really wanted to see Hogan beat him. You know, I really wanted Hogan to win. And that's something I don't know if kids today get. I wish that they did, or I wish I knew that they did. But as a kid, that match hooked me, that I really wanted Hogan to win, and I really wanted Savage to lose. And so I would go with that one just because of that.
Do you have a favorite current promotion? Is that even possible to say?
No.
Is there a show you watch?
I watch Raw and SmackDown because I review them on my Patreon. But if I...
What, for personal pleasure? No show that you really...
No wrestling for personal pleasure. No, there's nothing, man. And even if there was something good, it's so hard because I'm so just tired of it with all the crap that I've watched. I have no interest in watching a good wrestling show that I would like, because I'm so beat down by all the bad wrestling. It's like I don't even want to watch anymore. So it's really tough. If something was good, it would be really tough for me to watch something else added to my plate.
What's your favorite show of all time? Lost?
Yes.
Nice. Yes. Good stuff. Great show. I definitely got to go back and rewatch, because I was so torn about the last season, but seasons 1 through 5, oh my God. I was like, man, this show is awesome.
I would suggest, if you could, you know, binge the whole thing within a good amount of time frame, I think season 6 would come off better to you than originally watching it week after week after week, because it did for me anyway.
Now, where do you see yourself in a few years? Do you want to be writing for WWE? Do you want to stick with Vince Russo as the brand? Do you want to grow? Where do you see Jeff Lane? Where do you see yourself?
I honestly hope I'm still doing what I'm doing in a couple of years. Like, when this started, I always kept thinking, man, you know, when am I going to have to go find another job? Is this not going to work? But the way that this has grown is unbelievable. I don't want to be doing anything else. You know, I'm pretty spoiled when it comes to I work here at my house. You know, I don't have to go anywhere. I don't have to spend gas money. I don't have to worry about getting someone to come over and let my dogs out or any of that stuff. I'm always here. I'm very spoiled that way. There's a lot of personal investment in building this ourselves. We're just working for a company to collect a paycheck. The better I do at my job, it actually benefits everybody and benefits me personally and benefits Vince, and we can bring more people on. And I feel like I really, you know, this is where I'm supposed to be. So I hope I'm not anywhere different in a couple of years, and I hope we continue to keep growing the way we're growing.
Nice, awesome stuff. Now, please give us all the plugs, your Patreon, the brand, everything got, you know, going on with you and all the social media.
Yeah, if you're interested in the lost stuff, I'm going through episode by episode discussing it on my Patreon, and that's just on a dollar a month tier. It's very inexpensive at patreon.com/JeffLane22. I do some other things as well. That's where I do my WWE reviews. I also do some live gaming on Twitch a few nights throughout the week at twitch.tv/JeffLane22. Basically, JeffLane22 is where you can find me on everything. If you want to follow me on Twitter, JeffLane22. But of course, everything that I do always comes back to the brand, russosbrand.com. That's why I do all the other stuff that I do. That's the most important thing to me. So if you haven't checked us out, Vince Russo's the brand at russosbrand.com.
I'd like to thank everybody for listening. I'd like to thank Jeff especially for all the time today. Really appreciate it. Jeff, good luck with everything in the future with the Russo brand, Patreon, and everything else going forward. Thank you so much for all the time.
Hey, thank you, man. Thanks for inviting me on. I had a blast. Appreciate it.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.